3-2 for India, as we had predicted, trumping with a smacking 224-2 in 20 overs. And if there's one side which is capable of chasing that, that is England. But on this day, they fell short, 188-8. Hello and welcome to Hotspot Daily. As I mentioned, 3-2 to Daniel. Fair play. Your first thoughts on that hell of a game?
It was a hell of a game, wasn't it? Just fantastic batting at the top of the order from India, especially from Rohit Sharma and Surya Kumar Yadav. It was really interesting to see Virat Kohli going to the top of the order, as I'm sure he doesn't listen to this podcast, but I thought that was a good move, especially when India bat first, and it proved to be so. And really, for me, though, despite all of that, on a really flat deck, which was great for batting, we saw that the way Dawid Malan and Joss Butler began that reply. It all really came down to Bhuvneshwar Kumar. Fantastic bowling by him in the middle overs, just as England looked like they might actually chase down that extraordinary score. They've done it a couple of times. They did it against South Africa in 2020. They've done it in the T20 World Cup, but they couldn't this time, in large part, I think, due to Kumar's superb bowling between sort of overs 13 and 16. That put the mockers on them. And I think in the end, just the better side won, but it was a cracking series, a cracking game. And it's a testament to what you can do in five T20s. That's a bilateral series I'd be happy to watch again and again.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, especially Rohit Sharma and Surya Kumar Yadav, Virat Kohli. You didn't say especially Virat Kohli, because I'll tell you what, it was a brave move. And why? And it has very grave implications for India's World Cup aspirations, to be honest. Virat Kohli, when he comes out and says, you know what, I'm going to do this, there's a hint of confidence, there's a hint of arrogance that, okay, you know what, we need to play six bowlers, we need to drop a batsman, and if somebody's going to be shifted up, why not be me? And you know, you expect Virat Kohli to do that, because he plays his cricket in that manner. He has that aura of not only being the best batsman in world cricket at the moment, but knowing the fact that he is the best batsman in world cricket at the moment. He wears it on his sleeves that, okay, you know what, I am this, I can do this. And you know, there's a big difference in knowing something and then knowing something and doing something. And I thought he was absolutely magnificent on the night. 80 of 52, a strike rate slower than both Rohit and Surya Kumar Yadav, but his strike rate post, you know, scoring 40 or 45, it just shoots up. And it did yesterday as well, or did on Saturday night as well. And he held the innings together for what it mattered, really. And the fact that India played around, for me, that is the greatest fact here, that India played around with their batting in a series finale, where they were again put into bat on a great batting wicket. And they didn't even need Rishabh Pant and Shreyas Iyer. And they ended up scoring 224. And this was as perfect as it gets from India's point of view. And then, of course, we talk about the bowling. They were able to play six bowlers. If you remember, you know, in the previous podcast, we had discussed about possible changes. The one possible change I thought was KL Rahul sitting out for Ishan Kishan, if Ishan Kishan was fit. Yes, KL Rahul sat out, but they brought in an extra bowler. And because the pitch was so good, that 180-200 felt like a par score on it. So that's why probably they needed the sixth bowler. And it worked out really well, because they were able to hold back one of the pacers, especially Shardul, for the later stages. And then Bhuvneshwar Kumar, even though he bowled out by the 13th, 14th over, he got those... He broke that vital partnership between Dawid Malan and Joss Butler, because it looked like they would carry England home. And once that momentum was broken, Thakur came back with his slower deliveries and the ploy just worked for India. So for me, this was a perfect win for India. And like I said, it has grave implications, but we'll come back on those implications in just a bit.
Yes, well, it was pretty much the perfect performance. England began the series with their own perfect performance on a more difficult wicket, and India produced theirs on a flatter wicket. And I think actually that exposed England's problems ever so slightly. England's problems, such as they have them, have been in their bowling department. They've had trouble with their death bowling. Chris Jordan is still the preferred option, but his numbers don't really suggest that he's quite as effective at the death as other bowlers around the world. And despite England's power in their batting, they're more likely to leak runs, give away large scores. If anything, England, I think, are a more formidable opponent on pitches that aren't perfect batting tracks. And as a result, their shortcomings, I guess, were exposed. A couple of other little things, though, I think that were really important for England. Jofra Archer, clearly hampered by that niggle he's got in his elbow. He's flying home. He's not going to play in the one-day series, and he's not going to play at the start of the IPL. And you saw it a bit yesterday, actually. He didn't quite have the same zip, quite the same pace. He's such a key bowler for England. They're going to desperately need to keep him fit. And also, as I said, you've got the issue with Jordan at the death. And I think the lack of a second spinner with Moeen Ali as well is an issue for England. Those issues persist. They will have learned about that from this series. But it was an honourable result. It was a brilliant series. I think at the beginning of the series, I predicted India to win 3-2 for the very reason that I thought that just home advantage would sneak India home. And it proved to be the case. For England, a little bit of a headache around Dawid Malan, because I think there was almost a feeling after four matches that, well, maybe Malan had kind of played himself out of the side. But, you know, he batted superbly yesterday. And it was only when Jos Buttler got out, who's proved to be the key wicket every time England play, when Buttler goes, it gets that much more difficult for England. Malan has sort of played himself back into the side. And yet his raw numbers do suggest he should be there. You know, there are only two batters in men's T20s who have scored 1,000 runs and have an average of 50. One of them is Virat Kohli, the other is Dawid Malan. You might then say, well, Malan must be striking at a lower strike rate, but he's not. He's striking at a higher strike rate than anyone else in that England team. So, you know, I think there's a bit of a conundrum there because there's also a feeling sometimes that Malan gets those runs on good pitches and being high up the order and frequently in quite early. He gets the opportunity to post those figures, but you can't really argue with a man who's got 11 half-century scores in 24 matches. So my feeling is that Malan will start in that World Cup that's going to come round in October, and that on those kind of pitches, he's a really devastating batter. What England needed yesterday was a bit more from that middle order and a little bit of confusion still, Chetan Rains, I think, over Jordan's role with the bat. I was quite confused that he came in ahead of Archer. He came in ahead of Sam Curran, who in the IPL has been used at the top of the order, the middle of the order. He's a prodigious boundary hitter. He faced three balls yesterday, scored 14 runs, and yet Jordan was advanced ahead of him. This sounds like I've got a downer on Chris Jordan. I don't. He pulled off the most extraordinary catch you will see. If you haven't seen it, go to social media, find it. It was an absolute stunner running around the boundary one-handed. It's just that I think he's not perhaps being used to the best of his to his best function in this England side at the moment.
Absolutely. And Chris Jordan's catch won't find a mention on the scorecard, so you'll have to do some digging, which was rather unfair. And I think that is one of the rules that MCC really needs to look at. But taking in consideration your points about England, I still think that England are one of the better T20 sides. I still rate them higher than India, to be very honest. And for me, the reason for that is because they have a set plan. It did not work on the night, but then you were chasing 225. Things do go wrong. And if I was Evan Morgan, I wouldn't lose too much sleep on that performance alone. I would look at the entire series and say, okay, you know what? We've gone strength to strength. We gave India a real challenge. And India are really blowing hot at the moment. I mean, anything they're trying to do is coming off, but it's just a matter of, is it going to keep coming off for the next 8 to 9 months? That is the point. And we'll come back to that. From England's perspective, I agree on the Chris Jordan bit. Again, it's not his place in the side. But for me, you can't come to India, play five T20s. And like I'd mentioned in the previous podcast as well, you can't play five T20s and not play a second spinner. And I think that was a trick that they missed yesterday. It's because when you have Sam Curran, Mark Woad, Jofra Archer, Jordan, and then obviously Ben Stokes, your attack becomes a bit one-dimensional. It becomes unilateral in the sense that, okay, Jordan and Mark would get your early wickets. But if they don't, then you're relying mostly on pace to get wickets on pitches, and it was a batting beauty yesterday, on pitches which will have really good carry, not much movement, and the batsman will be able to hit across the line. I mean, you look at that partnership between Virat and Rohit, they figured out that Wood and Archer are going to bowl short of length, as they have done all series. And these are two of the greatest white ball batsmen you'll ever see. And they got under the line. You know, they got back in, they were back in form, so they were able to easily get under the line of those short of length deliveries and peppered the leg side boundary. And they got those big runs going, especially Rohit Sharma. I mean, the ease with which he hits sixes. For me, he's the easiest six hitter in world cricket and probably in world cricket history, although a lot of people will argue with that. However, I digress. And then, of course, the issue with chasing 225, as I said, it's just too high a total. And you need everything to go right. Jason Roy's duck didn't help, for that matter. And even when they lost momentum, they needed somebody to come in and just keep hitting. And it's not always easy, as turned out to be the case. However, I think if they can get that bowling thing right, I don't think there's much England can't do. I see you raising your finger, and I will refer to you just now, but I have to talk about Bhuvneshwar Kumar. What a revelation. Two wickets for 15 and four overs, 17 dot balls when you're chasing 225. That's a very handy bowler.
It was superb. And I wanted to mention him exactly because I thought he showed actually how to bowl on those wickets. So the problem that England had got, I think, was that you're dead right. They have a plan, and they'd stuck to it throughout the series. And it was Wood and Archer with pace. Actually, Jordan bowling more pacey than he normally does, fewer variations. And that had worked on those previous wickets. Bowling first, they were expecting something similar again, and they didn't get it.
Exactly.
So when Jordan, Archer and Wood came at the Indian batters with pace, it was exactly what they wanted. You look at the way Kumar bowled, Bhuvneshwar Kumar bowled, he took pace off, he varied his lines. He didn't vary his lengths a great deal, but he dragged the batters outside their comfort zone, especially brilliant to the left-handers. England didn't really do that. The first real slower ball we saw was when Ben Stokes came into the attack and then picked up the wicket with it. They didn't quite adapt, I think, to those conditions as quickly as they might have done. And it was, you know, it was one of those pitches where they really needed actually to bat first. And for many years, England had actually preferred to bat first in white ball cricket. They'd done it a lot. But we'd got into this kind of narrative, I guess, that the pitch at Ahmedabad was a bowl first wicket every time, especially because of the dew. And they came at it with the same plan as they came for a previous game. And it was just a little bit like how England approached the Test series, if they don't mind me saying so. They sort of playing the previous Test, if you know what I mean. Now, this doesn't mean, and I think you're dead right, I think this doesn't mean that Owen Morgan has to lose a great deal of sleep over either the composition of his side or their ability to win a World T20. But it will, I hope, teach them to be that little bit more adaptable, to see in that first couple of overs when the ball was coming through dead straight, there was no real deviation off the seam, there was nothing going on in the air. At that point, there just needs to be a bit more variety. Jofra Archer did attempt to bring some variety into it, but as I said earlier, I think that niggle did hamper him. He just didn't look quite the same bowler. For Mark Wood, it is an issue because his primary purpose in that side is to bowl pace and at fire. I mean, he's bowled the fastest spell of any England bowler in T20 history, four overs at 91.5 miles an hour on average, and I think the fourth game. That's his role. Unfortunately, on that pitch for England, that really wasn't what was needed. If anything, he needed to be able to find a bit of variety, some change-ups. That's not Mark Wood's game. So England just got to think a little bit on their feet, but I think they'll do that. They're a very experienced side. A lot of their players will be playing in IPL. A lot of this information will be sucked up, will be absorbed by the analysts. When they come back out in October for the World T20, they'll be that much better for the experience.
And I'll tell you what, just to add on a bit there, Ben Stokes, you mentioned, was the first one to bowl a slower delivery. He was actually the sixth bowler that England used out of six, to be honest. And I think if England are serious about the T20 World Cup, and I believe they are, they will tell Ben Stokes to go and play the IPL for Rajasthan Royals and try to bowl a bit more in the power play. Because if you're going in with Jofra Archer and Mark Wood, and you're going to have that pace element up top, and let's say it does not carry off, and that is a learning that England can take from India. Bhuvneshwar Kumar was bowling stupendously in the power play, so they brought in the slower bowlers and they held back their paces. Because they knew, you know, they can't have the same pace and they would need that towards the later end when when Shardul Thakur could use his variations a bit. So it was important to hold back pace. And that is a ploy that Mumbai Indians use. That's a ploy that India also use when they have Jasprit Bumrah available. In the power play, he'll bowl one over, maybe two. And that is why playing three paces is such an important deal for both Mumbai Indians and the Indian team. Because when you're able to hold back Jasprit Bumrah, so he bowls one over in the power play, then you give it to somebody like a Hardik Pandya who can vary his pace, who can bowl those variation. And then Bumrah comes in later, say bowls one over between 8 to 12 overs, and then he bowls two overs at the back of the inning. So that is something really important. So they can use somebody like a Jofra Archer for that, even if they want to attack with pace. And then maybe have Ben Stokes bowling in the power play, because on Indian pitches, especially on a batting beauty like that, you need that change of pace. And I think Stokes is a very, very clever bowler. I think in this lineup, like I'd mentioned earlier on, when India won the second T20, only Stokes was capable of varying the pace. And he came really late in the bowling attack. And it was the same story on Saturday night as well. Right. Now we come to the part which has greater implications for the T20 World Cup. And that was the post-match presentation where to Harsha Bhogle, Virat Kohli said he will open in the IPL. And I'll admit, I already knew that because I have been talking to someone in RCB and they hinted that the idea behind dropping Aaron Finch this year was for Virat Kohli to open. And I didn't want to say it out loud on Twitter or anything because it was not a source or anything. It was just a conversation. I can reveal it now because now it's out in the public. I had a hint that Virat Kohli was looking to open in the IPL, but the bigger revelation was when he said that he would want to do it for the international T20s as well. So immediately you start to wonder that literally ends Shikhar Dhawan's T20 international career, because he was already on the chopping board with Ishan Kishan coming in. Everybody thought Ishan Kishan will be your third opening choice going into the T20 World Cup. But suddenly, it's KL Rahul because he's been shunted out of the side. Now you start wondering what happens to KL Rahul. So, I like the move because like I've said earlier on this podcast as well, if you remember, Daniel, I think opening is the best choice for Virat Kohli. And when batting with Rohit Sharma, if it comes off again and again and again, the bowling attacks are just going to be destroyed. Now, whether he does that when India are batting first, or he has another opening choice when India are chasing, that's going to be interesting in terms of the balance India achieve. Because if you're playing six bowlers, you can't play that extra batsman. If you can't play that extra batsman, that means somebody like a KL Rahul or Ishan Kishan will be sitting out. The other implication for this is, with Surya Kumar Yadav, he's had two magnificent innings at number three, which has certainly given him that number three spot. If he doesn't bat at number three in the next T20 India play, whenever that is, I will lose my mind. The issue for me there is that earlier, it was Shreyas Iyer and Surya Kumar Yadav who were competing for the same spot. That's no longer the case. Now it turns out it might actually be KL Rahul who's competing with Shreyas Iyer, because there's a chance that he will be shunted down the order. Will KL Rahul now bat in the middle order in the IPL? That is an interesting question. The other question now here is Ishan Kishan the second choice wicketkeeper now? Because now he's competing with Rishabh Pant because he's no longer the third opening choice. So, see, why I say England are ahead of India is because of this. Everything is going well and then Virat Kohli will come in and throw a spanner in the works, which is fine as long as it works. And I am now going to end my monologue by saying this. This is going to be a fantastic move. Virat Kohli opening the innings with Rohit Sharma. I think they should do it. I tweeted last night, with Virat Kohli opening, Royal Challengers Bangalore have a higher chance of winning, even by 10%, if not more. The reason why I did not say 50% or 60% is because of captaincy. RCB lose IPL not because of batting issues, not because of bowling issues. Yes, they have batting and bowling issues, but not because of those issues alone. They lose mostly because of their captaincy and strategic decisions. Now, here's the point I'm trying to make. This is a great move, a potentially great move, but it's also a sackable offense. If India do this, if Virat Kohli does this, and they do not win the T20 World Cup, he should be sacked as Indian T20 captain.
Well, that's a punchy theory, Chetan. And look, I think the advantage that India have got, and Kohli has got, quite frankly, is he's got the IPL to test out that theory to a degree. It's a wonderful tournament to be able to try these plans. And let's face it, it's a tournament that's produced these stars like Ishan Kishan, Suryakumar Yadav. We'll wait and see. My gut feeling is, as you know, because I've mentioned it on this podcast a few times, that I like the look of Kohli at the top. If I had a player who had such complete mastery of his game and the ability to go through gears, can you imagine if Jos Buttler had Virat Kohli's all-round game, what a difference that would make to England? Where England are always a little bit on tenterhooks because Jos Buttler, a truly brilliant white ball player, but he lives, it always feels ever so slightly on the edge. With Kohli, you don't really sense that. And when he's opening, I just think that gives a superb feeling to the rest of the players around him. And there's massive natural power hitters. So for me, look, I think it's the right move. And I think the IPL is going to probably determine whether that does happen in the World Test Championship. And it's a great thing to have. Now, I wonder, from an England point of view, where Stokes might be used by the Rajasthan Royals in this world, in this IPL, because I think that might also inform slightly how his batting is used for England. His batting has really been underused, you'd say, for England in T20 internationals. He's yet to get a T20 international 50. We know that he has certainly the potential to do much, much better than that. And if he's batting high up the order, if he's even opening with Jos Buttler, I wonder what that will do for England's plans. Might he be shunted further up the order, up to three or even opening? We'll see. For England, there's still, I think, and I agree with everything that you say about their plans being in place, there's still a little bit of concern about a couple of personnel. Jason Roy is an issue because he's had poor form now for about a year. And Alex Hales, I keep coming back to him. He's got this black mark against his name ever since about May of 2019, before the World Cup. He feels, at the moment, on current form, like he's a better bet at the top of the order. But of course, between now and October, form can turn around. Jason Roy's got the entire English summer to hone his skills. He's not playing in the IPL. He's going to get plenty of both red ball and white ball cricket and the 100. Because for England, their players are going to get those that are available, and many of the T20 squad will be for the 100. They're going to get a lesson in having to tee off 20 balls fewer. That's just that you have to go right from the start and you can't stop. So that could be, in a strange kind of way, a terrific breeding ground for England's power hitters. It's all perfectly set up. It's been a superb series. We've loved every minute of it. We get the opportunity now to speculate. But before that, this marathon tour of India is not yet done. So we've got 50 over white ball cricket, and I'm not... it feels a bit after the Lord Mayor's show, doesn't it, Chet? I mean, a bilateral three-match one-day series two years away from a World Cup. I'd be fascinated to know what both sides are going to do that with their personnel there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the logic, there's a logic behind having ODI series is because broadcasters, they need money. I mean, Star Sports wants to make money. And yes, test matches are longer, but they don't sell as much. They don't last more than 2 days nowadays, apparently. T20s, they're great, but they're only 4 hours. So you can't really have advertisements as many as you want, even though you have them at a higher rate, potentially. I mean, the reason ODI cricket is alive, and the reason why ODI cricket, I personally believe, will always be alive, is because it's 8 hours of cricket. You're able to sell a lot of ad spots for 8 hours. And that's why the ODI World Cup is still the biggest property that cricket has to offer. Obviously, the format needs a change. And when I say the format needs a change, I think we need to see a little less of ODI bilateral series and maybe a few more of tri-series or quadrangulars like we used to see in the 90s. And I tell you why, because they're fast losing context. And I remember in Manchester, in the 2019 ODI World Cup, I had reached my 100th ODI. As a reporter, and I went to MS Dhoni to get a memento, and he told me, you know what, I hope you get to 200, but it's going to be bloody difficult. And I was like, okay, why do you say that? He said, because if you look at the calendar over the next 4 or 5 years, there are not going to be many ODIs played, and even when they are played, it's not going to be more than three ODIs. It's not going to be five or seven ODIs that as we have had in the past. You know, in the last 2 decades, 5 ODIs was the norm. Now, especially with the World ODI League also setting in, it's quickly becoming the norm that we'll have 3 ODIs and we're going to have 3 T20s. Earlier, it used to be 5 ODIs and 1 T20 or 2 T20s. So that is fast changing. And Dhoni, although he was closer to retirement at that time, he had a finger on what he was on where cricket was heading. So that's why his brain was so sharp, you can say. Talking about the ODI series, I think very quickly we need to have a little preview because the turnaround is very little. I'm looking at the Indian squad and the key changes for that. Obviously, Surya Kumar Yadav, he is now in the ODI squad as well. So that'll be interesting if he comes in. The other interesting element for me is what happens with KL Rahul, because KL Rahul was the designate wicketkeeper in ODI cricket. And he would bat in the middle order because there was no place for Rishabh Pant. Now, what happens to that? If he's left out, that's going to be very, very troublesome. Also, Shikhar Dhawan to open, is that going to happen or is that the end of his career? Because Shubman Gill is there. He's had a good 2021. He would have had a fantastic 2021 if he had scored a couple of hundreds when he had the opportunity. But will Shubman Gill be tried as an opener? The big issue I see is India used T20s ahead of the 2019 ODI World Cup as a hotbed for experimentation for the ODI World Cup. Are they going to do the same? Are they going to do the same in ODIs? I don't see Virat Kohli opening, but they should want to give some of the other batsmen a chance. Like they want to give Surya Kumar Yadav a playing chance. KL Rahul, I think he needs game time. Whether they'll continue playing him in the middle, it's a question mark. Shikhar Dhawan, will he get a lifeline? The other interesting choice, Krunal Pandya, he needs playing time because if Ravindra Jadeja is not fit for the T20 World Cup, you need a left-arm spinner, you know, spin bowling all-round combination there. And in terms of the bowling, Prasidh Krishna, he's been elevated from the IPL, Kolkata Knight Riders youngster, under-19 World Cupper for India. It'll be interesting to see how he goes. If he gets a game, Bhuvneshwar Kumar. The one thing I don't want to see Bhuvneshwar Kumar do is play the 3-match ODI series because I think they should wrap him in cotton wool. Let him play T20 cricket. Let him stay safe. So Mohammad Siraj is there. Kuldeep Yadav makes a comeback. Yuzvendra Chahal is there again. So maybe these two might want to regain some confidence. So it'll be interesting to see what India do in terms of combination. But there are a few question marks going into that ODI series.
There are, but for England, they don't have Jofra Archer, which is a big blow. Well, I say it's a big blow. I think there's a certain realism around a 3-match one-day international series. But England haven't got an awful lot of players that they're going to be experimenting with. Parkinson, the leg spinner that a lot of Indians will know nothing about. I expect him to get a run out at some point. And I certainly expect Moeen Ali finally to get some time. I mean, bless him, he was rested for the Test series to be available for the T20s. And if he doesn't play in the one-day internationals, then frankly, he would be entitled to storm off and never play for England again, I think. So yeah, I'd expect Adil Rashid, Moeen Ali to resume their spin bowling partnership. They were an integral part of England's 50-over side for a long time. It was only towards the very end of that World Cup, actually, that Moeen Ali was left out. From a pace bowling point of view, there's Mark Wood. I wonder how much they'll really want him to play. He's got a bruised heel that took him out of the second T20. He is a player who has had a lot of injury problems in his career. And suddenly stepping up to 10 overs in a day from 4 overs in a day, I don't know quite what the value of that is. England, as a precaution, have also ensured that Chris Jordan and Jake Ball will stay on with the side. I don't think we'll see much of Ball, but we might see something of Jordan. England's batters are really the standout for England in one-day internationals. And if the pitches, I don't know what the pitches be like at Pune, but if they're anything like that fifth T20, then that will very much suit Roy. It'll be an opportunity for him to find some form. Johnny Bairstow, Joss Butler, Owen Morgan, Ben Stokes, they all then, in that longer format, become extremely dangerous players. I'll be interested to see, from an India point of view, how they approach 50 overs. They've traditionally not really sort of shot for the stars in 50 overs, by which I mean, you know, you don't see Indian sides aiming for 350 plus up to 400, tending to be kind of happy with getting around 300, 320 and being able to defend it. The way England play their 50 over cricket is to get is to go hell for leather for a lot longer. So, I mean, all this will be dependent on pitches, and you know the Pune pitch better than I do. But if they're flat, we could see some mammoth scores, especially with the more fearless young guns in that Indian side. I wouldn't be surprised if we had a 400 against a 400. We'll see. Tell me, what do we expect in Pune from the pitch?
Well, during the day, it'll be pretty hot. And if they do provide flat pitches with it, which they sometimes tend to do, especially in the IPL, and it's not going to be any difference because it's white ball format. It'll be interesting to see if it's going to have the variations in terms of pitches, because again, we are using the same stadium and there'll be two or three different pitches that will be used for these three matches. In terms of variation of pace and bounce, as we saw in Ahmedabad, not only for the test, but also for the 5T20. So that's a little unpredictable. That's something that we'll have to wait and watch. However, it's an open ground. There are no stands as such, except a grandstand, a small media box at the other end. It's all open. So, and it's all forest area. There's a highway next to it. So if it's breezy, it comes in and dew could be a factor, but the ball tends to do a bit under the lights at Pune. I remember Bhuvneshwar Kumar enjoying a lot with the white ball. Even in the IPL, I've seen at times the ball doing a bit under the lights. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a crazy mix, but I can say with some confidence that the pitches are going to be good for batting. Whether they are going to be as good, as you said, for 400, I am not sure, because you usually don't see those type of scores in India, because the pitches do degrade over the course of an ODI, even if not over the course of an entire series. So I would say 350 is max par during an ODI series. In India, very rarely you will see 400, but you're right. India do not go hell for leather. But like I said, they've used T20s as ODI experimental hotbed in 2019. Will they do that for the 2020 World Cup this year? That remains to be seen. But because if they are able to, because if they do that, then they will also go hell for leather. Either way, it's going to be an interesting series. Last time England came here, they lost the three-match ODI series very narrowly, 2-1. And obviously, they went on to win the World Cup after that. So let me tell you, neither side is going to give the other side any quarter in this three-match series. And before we sign off, I would just like to say, I know Matthew Parkinson just a bit more than the average Indian fan. And why? Because I've been playing cricket captain, the simulation game, and he's a very handy leg spinner. Of course, real life is always different than simulation. And with that thought, we leave you for the moment. But we'll be back after the first ODI with our reviews and thoughts. Do join in. Do keep listening. For the moment, it's Chetan Arula and Daniel Norcross saying goodbye.
Goodbye.